Nope.
Touchdown, Washington.
Yep.
Washington State University.
Nope.
Touchdown, Washington.
Yep.
Oregon and Stanford.
Nope.
Touchdown, Washington.
Yep.
Los perros esquimales están arriba. Y hoy, los patos de Oregón bow down to Washington.
Welcome back to the Dog Pod, your original podcast covering the 13-0 Pac-12 champions into perpetuity and beyond. Law Dog, I don't care what Wazoo and Oregon State think of that. That's what it is. Second-ranked CFP Sugar Bowl-bound Washington Huskies tackle football team. I'm with Law Dog. I'm with Mitch. The Huskies are in day three of boots on the ground in New Orleans. I'll be there Sunday as the lone Dog Pod correspondent. We got to talk about this Sugar Bowl. CFP, it's number two versus number three. Gentlemen, buckled up. You ready to go?
Let's do it.
Let's do this. Okay, here we go. 7:45 local time, 5:45 Pacific, Monday, January 1st, 2024 on ESPN. It's number three Texas and number two Washington in the All-State Sugar Bowl, live from the artificial turf of the Caesars Superdome. Only the sixth matchup between these two programs. We had a home-and-home in 74 and 75 where Jarrell Royal, who bears the name of the stadium, beat Jim Owens in his last year in Austin and then came back and beat John James in his first year at UW and Husky Stadium. Pretty crazy. Don James would come back and beat Texas in the Alamo Bowl in 79. Remember that? You guys remember this one. Mac Brown Longhorns, they beat Neuheisel in 2001 in the Hollydale Bowl, that big 47-43 shootout. And of course, we're going to talk about it. 27-20, UW over Texas last year in the Alamo Bowl. So here we go.
I'm gonna do you one better. If you stick around for the end, BT, we'll have some more parallels. We'll have some more info on Darryl Royal. So let's get to this one.
We're gonna get into it. This year's Texas team, man, they've had some big wins. They beat number three Alabama on the road. It's hard to do. They crushed Kansas 40-14. They handled Okie State in the Big 12 Championship 49-21. But hey, 34-30 loss to Oklahoma in the Red River rivalry. One score win against very down Houston and TCU teams. But hey, Sark's boys for the first time can say Texas is back. They're calling this the revenge tour. They've avenged all their 22 losses against Bama, Texas Tech, Oklahoma State, TCU. And what they're calling this one? The final leg of the revenge tour against Washington. We'll see. Fellas, let's talk about this Texas offense and how they stack up against the Husky D.
Yeah, a lot of talk. We've been hearing a lot of barking this week. So, Law Dog, let's play off each other a little bit here. Let's start at the QB spot, right? Because that's where I think it really matters, right? Let's take a look at Quinn Ewers and what he's done. Last year, threw for 2,100 yards, 15 TDs to 6 interceptions, and a 58.1% completion percentage. He's had a much better year this year. Those numbers are all up across the board. 3,161 yards, 21 TDs to 6 INTs, significant increase in his completion percentage to 79.2. You look at his last few games, always like looking at that. Solid in their thrashing of Oklahoma State, threw for 452 yards, 4 TDs, 1 interception, 76% completion rate. In that win against Texas Tech, it's kind of a 57-7 win, 65.4% completion, 26-16 win at Iowa State, 70% completion rate. That's what I'm looking at, his completion rate. Why? I rewound the tape. Let's talk about the revenge tour a little bit, BT. Rewound the tape last year to the Alamo Bowl against Texas. He was not sharp. At times, he was missing guys that were open. Granted, he had some terrible drops from Xavier Worthy, right? Mm-hmm. That should have been touchdowns in that game, but he wasn't that sharp and he wasn't that concerned. He was certainly no Bo Nix, Bo check down Nix. So, you know, you look at him taking a step forward, but at the same time, like, still feel like the Huskies have faced up against higher level quarterback play in the Pac-12 this year against folks like Caleb Williams or Bo Nix. So, what do you see, Law Dog, in that quarterback play?
Yeah, well, I think Ewers made a big jump this year. And, I mean, you got to remember, he was just a freshman last year. He was their, like, blue-chip, can't-miss prospect as a freshman last year. And then, you know, this year they go out and sign Arch Manning, and Ewers is kind of fighting for the job a little bit. But as a sophomore, took a big step forward. And, you know, I was going to point out the same thing. I mean, the misses that he had in that Alamo Bowl game last year, you know, could have changed the game, could have turned the tide, right? So I think we shouldn't totally take it lightly that we're going to get that same Quinn Ewers this time around. The other thing was they had Bijan Robinson sitting out that game, and the Huskies were able to really bottle up Jonathan Brooks, who's going to be kind of the lead back for Texas in this game. So I think that was kind of a good sign. Of course, you've lost a couple of guys from that Washington defense from a year ago, but I think the way that they played against Oregon gives you some optimism there. That the Texas running game isn't going to maybe be exactly what it was the rest of this season. But I think that's – and Xavier Worthy, as you mentioned. I mean, just – you know, lightning in a bottle at wideout. And if he gets behind this defense, you know, I can imagine that's what they are going to try to attack in this game, as every other team has tried to do this season. Mm-hmm. So they're going to be looking for Ewers to Worthy. And they're thinking on the Texas podcast, they're talking about if we just hits a couple of those, we win that game. And they might be mm-hmm. right.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. So great, great point. Let's move on to some running backs, to your point. Update for you, Law Dog. Jonathan Brooks tore his ACL in their November 11th TCU matchup. They actually did a pretty classy move. They lined him up on the last play of their Big 12 title game. And they like basically handed him the ball where he could take a knee. But it's doubtful that he's really going to be, you know, carrying the rock significantly, considering he's injured. And that's significant, guys. Right? We're talking over 1,139 rushing yards on 187 carries, 10 TDs. He averaged 5.1 yards per carry. Look what's behind him. Not a lot.
Baxter,
129 carries, 595 yards, 4 TDs, 4.6 yards per carry. Another guy, Jadon Blue, 56 carries, 339 yards, 2 TDs, 6.1 yards per carry. And then the guy we saw in the Alamo Bowl last year, Keelan Robinson, who had 75 yards on 4 carries and 2 TDs in that Big 12 title game against Ohio State. But, you know, certainly they're talented, right? Like, at the same time, there's a significant drop-off, I guess is my point, between their main bell cow, Jonathan Brooks, who doesn't look like he's going to be playing.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, Baxter, I think, is one of those guys, one of those blue chip guys. And he, you know, was second on the team in carries. So I think we could see plenty of him. Keelan Robinson. But again, Robinson didn't do much in the Alamo Bowl a year ago. So I don't think that's really how Texas is necessarily going to attack the Husky defense. And I think the fact that they played so much better down the stretch, especially in the secondary, gives me some hope that they'll be able to kind of keep the Texas offense at bay a little bit.
I agree. I think they're going to be okay against the run game. Knock on wood. We'll see what happens. Mm-hmm. But again, you look at the Pac-12 play that we've had this year with running backs, like significantly different type of game preparation. Right. And so, okay. So if we're saying we're not overly concerned about that run game, then let's close the chapter here a little bit on their receiving core and their tight ends. Right. Xavier Worthy, right? Guys, pretty darn good, right? 73 receptions, 969 yards, averages 13.3, had 5 TDs on the air. Adonai Mitchell, kind of have a two-headed monster there, 51 receptions for 813 yards, 10 TDs, and a really athletic tight end in Jatavion Sanders, right? 39 receptions for 607 yards and 2 TDs, averages 15 yards per carry, right? It's going to be Ewers, I think, and, you know, attacking us with those receivers. Looks like they do a lot, you know, from terms of you know working off of that play action pass a little bit, but if we're not concerned about the run, the one last thing I also saw was that Jonathan Brooks, the running back who got hurt, had 25 receptions for 286 yards, guys. So like they like to get the ball out to their running backs. One last thing that I noticed and some analysis that I saw for the game was I guess somebody said that Texas and Washington both do a ton of offensive motion before the snap count to see, you know, kind of how the defense is set around. They all move their players around quite a bit significantly. So I'm really curious to see how that plays out with, you know, kind of the defensive game plan that, you know, Washington puts together for them. So
yeah,
let's say you, Law Dog, on what you see from those receivers.
I don't want to poo-poo it too much. I mean, I think Sark, you know, is a fantastic play caller. We know what kind of offense he's going to run. He's going to run that pro style play action, you know, just that traditional kind of pro style offense that he runs. And, you know, I think they're executing a lot better on it this year than they were a year ago. So it's going to take, you know, a big effort from this Washington defense. And Worthy is a guy who, you know, kind of scares me coming into this game, because he, if not for a couple of big plays, you know, Texas could have turned the tables on us. So I think this is going to be a tall task for this Washington defense. But I, like I said, I think they've been playing a lot better down the stretch, and I'm optimistic that they'll come to play in this one, especially with all the disrespect coming at them from around the country.
But Natavian Sanders is the one who he worries me a little bit of an X factor. If you think of, this is worry work, but think of historically, not as much this year, but these big tight ends that are really athletic have caused us fits. And even think of Io Manor this year from in the Stanford game, who causes problems, right? They would just, they'd find ways to get him going up against Jabbar Muhammad and some of our shorter corners and pick us apart in the end zone. And Jatavion Sanders is probably the best tight end that we've faced this year.
Yeah, could be.
Absolutely gifted. But
I will say one last thing, and I don't want to put too much stock on it. I keep going back to this Alamo Bowl and watching it from last year, because there is a significant amount of overlap on players, right? And it is another year. To your point, Law Doc, great point on yours. He's a different player than he was last year, right? Like, but that being said, if you look at our defense, right? Like, we had Jordan Perryman out there as our top corner. Our linebackers were not playing like they were. Our defensive line was not playing like it was. So, like, yes, I do believe this Texas offense maybe is a step above of what we saw last year. But again, I think our defense is significantly better as well. So it's going to be fascinating to see how that plays out.
Well, and both teams last year's game were, you know, Huskies were on the outside of the top 10 at that point. And Texas was kind of, you know, they were ranked, we were ranked good teams high up in the rankings, but not Final Four teams, right? So you got to assume both of these teams have improved significantly to get to this point.
Mitch is right, though. We didn't have Jabbar Muhammad last year.
Right.
It's better than anyone in the secondary we had last year. We're finally healthier than we've been since maybe spring ball. Word is Asa Turner is going to play a whole game. He's practicing with no club on his hand. Cam Fab can go the whole game. And everyone else that's been subbing for these two guys has game experience. Like, so, look, both sides are improved. But I mean, you could argue that our secondary is taking a bigger step forward. You know,
love
Xavier
it.
Worthy had an off game last year.
Yeah,
still had talent. Totally. He just had a bad game last year.
I'm just like, okay, I'll say my last takeaway here is I haven't watched a lot of Texas offensive tape, right? Obviously, I haven't watched a lot of their games. I keep going back to it. I think the Pac-12 had some very prolific offenses this year. I don't think Texas is anything head and shoulders above what the Huskies have seen. And so I'm looking forward to this game, looking forward to the narrative, to really kind of go toe to toe in these games. And, you know, these comments around Washington not being able to play big boy football. Guess what? I think some of that is now really going to be put to the test. And I think it's going to be a lot of these guys are going to be eating crow on realizing the quality of the football that happened on the West Coast this year.
Look, I mean, you keep reading about the keys to the game and what I'm hearing, and I've listened to a few of these Texas podcasts, we just got to keep the ball in Michael Penix's hands, and we're going to run it down their throat. And, you know, look, if you can run 6.5-7 yards per carry, and it's one of these backs has 150, 200-yard game, sure, you're right. You probably win. Mm-hmm. I just don't think you can do that. I really don't think you can against this defense. It's been interesting on the podcast too, of like a lot of, you know, we're going up and down this Washington roster, and all I'm seeing is three star guys up and down. We got more 4 stars. You know, they have more 3 stars and we got 4 stars. I'm like, what the hell does any of this shit matter, man?
Well, Michael Penix is a 3 star. It goes to a larger point, because you see this with the Oregon fans, you know, online all the time too, and all these SEC fans and all that. I mean, you know, the recruiting rankings at a certain point they matter, and at another point they really just don't matter. I mean, if Michael Penix is a 3 star, what's the point of having the 4 and 5 star?
That's right. It's been interesting seeing. Look, they're
Rome Odunze. Is a 4 star. Great.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, you know, but if that's not a 5 star receiver, then what's a 5 star? And Ulofosio and Yeah, some of our guys who were just like
fully unranked,
you know, because in the Western United States, guys, sometimes we're a little bit off the grid when you get to back to the East Coast. So I don't put too much stock in that. Who cares? You know, recruiting is recruiting and we've got to do a great job there. But I don't think in this game, you know, I don't think that is a like that should not be discussed on their podcast.
And I guess BT, like, I do think it just goes into this fuel on this team, which is, I love the fact that we're underdogs. I love the fact that nobody's picking, disrespecting the team, you know, all of that, because they are just going to come out, I think, fired up and ready to go, right? Not that they needed any more motivation. It's just putting them over the top, I think, too, which is fantastic.
Well, from what I hear of guys in the locker room, it's that they're just just astounded that anyone would think they're not going to win. They just are. They're like, amazing. Like, they really don't see what's going on with this team and are so focused inward. Look, Texas offense is impressive. There's a reason they went in and won at Alabama. That they beat Oklahoma State, won the Big 12 championship. They got a great team, a lot of talent. I think our defense is going to step up to the challenge. One thing I really want to see is the unleashing of Zach Durfee. And I hear some of the other guys saying, look, you know, he doesn't, you know, I don't even know if he's going to play. He hasn't seen his team. He's going to play. He's going to play. And it might be the first time it's just on third and long as a go get the quarterback. You know, because he hasn't played in front of more than 4,000 people and hasn't played enough on the field. But for everything that I hear about what an absolute physical specimen and mind of an edge he's going to play. And so not only are we as healthy as we've ever been, I've heard Tuli Latuli Gasanoa, no snap, no count.
Nice.
Unleashed, ready to go, right? So team's healthy. I'm super excited about it. Let's talk about a little bit up the other side of the ball. This Texas defense, man. Talk about a group that's really stepped up over the last 2 years and is a lot better. Led by our old friend Coach Kwiatkowski, Coach K, and Jeff Choate. How about Jeff Choate? You guys know heading to head coach Nevada after the CFP. Huh? He's actually been in Reno the first 2 weeks of December. So he was there until the 14th when Texas was off, and now he's back with the team. You know, these guys went – remember this? They went 5-7 their first time.
Year one.
Yeah. Even last year. I went down to that game last year, the Texas-Alabama game, to check out Austin. And a lot of guys calling for their heads, even then. You know, even last year, calling for these guys' heads. But wow, I mean, just a much better defense this year. Top three in the nation against the run. They only allow 80 yards a game. Top three against third down. They're only allowing 26.5% conversions on third down. And in the red zone, the red zone, same thing, top three. They only give up 17 points a game. They have 23 takeaways, 2.4 sacks a game. They play fast. They play physical. This year's team, they don't appear to tire out in the second half like last year's team. You know, take case in point, that game that I went to last year in Austin against Alabama, it was all second half, and they just looked gassed, hands on hip and gassed. Mm-hmm. You could say the same thing in the Alamo Bowl. Like, when we started going tempo, we just gassed them, and they haven't shown that this year. But if you go through top to bottom, man, I mean, it's, you know, the way they play, we know this defense, man. Standard 4-2-5 shell, right? I mean, this is Coach K. Sometimes they'll load up six up front. Sometimes it looks like a 2-4-5. It's standard nickel defense, right? Their interior D line, holy smokes, man. The front two of Devondre Sweat, legit 6'4", 362 pounds. You know, he's the one making lots of quotes. They win awards, we win awards, right? This dude was 245 pounds in high school, and he's put on a buck 20 since then. He's that Vita Vea guy in the middle that everybody likes.
Vita Vea, yeah.
I mean, you know, I hate to say it, right? And Byron Murphy, right? Not that Byron Murphy, but their Byron Murphy, 6'1", 300-pound junior. He rounds out what I think a lot of people think is the strongest interior two-punch combo in college football. And maybe they're right. I don't know. They use a rotation. They've got other guys. Alfred Collins, he moves around a bunch, but he can do interior pass rush. Trill Carter, he's the Minnesota transfer. This is a guy who was a two-year Gopher starter, and he comes off the bench, you know, for Texas. 6 foot, all 300 pounds plus, large on the interior. The edges, now this is where I think things get a little interesting. Barry Sorrell played a bunch as a freshman, strong side edge. I don't think he stepped up like they want him to. Ethan Burke, 6'6", super rangy, true sophomore, 255 pounds, strong against the run, but neither is your pen your ears back quarterback pass pressure rusher. I hate to say this. On their edges, I think we have all three minimum edges that are better than these two guys.
Wow.
But the middle?
Yeah.
Yikes, man.
Right.
Linebackers, Jalen Ford, the senior, man, the Mike linebacker. He leads the team, 91 tackles. He has two picks. He's the leader back there. David Bend, the fifth year junior, it's really important for him, I think, to go side to side and sideline to sideline. He gets really criticized. I've been listening to a lot of their pods about chasing, kind of chasing ghosts, getting super out of position. And man, no one like Grubb can get you chasing ghosts, right? Anthony Hill Jr., this guy's strong side linebacker, number one linebacker in the country out of high school last year. They flipped him from A&M, Big 12 defensive freshman player of the year, 63 tackles and 5 sacks. I mean, you get some other backups. Another one, backups, Jeb Bush, not that Jeb Bush, but a different one. Maurice Blackwell playing strong side, usually not on the field on the nickel, but like a game of this magnitude, I don't know if you see these guys, man. I think they might play with just those starters. Corners, let's talk about, and linebackers, like, really good against the run. Get caught a bit against the pass. Can they go edge to edge? Because I think that's what we're going to play them against. The corners, Malik Muhammad, Jabbar's cousin, the freshman from DeSoto, Texas. Huh. And Terrence Brooks, man. These guys both played in the Big 12 championships. I think one guy they were missing, Ryan Watts, he's probably their best corner. And he missed the Big 12 championship, but they say he's back and fully healthy. 6'3", 250 pounds. He's the best guy against the zone of the run. The nickel, Jadae Barron. Kind of their Swiss Army knife, 185-pound nickel corner. You hear these guys are a little small, right? Can play safety if need be. He's played both this year. Led the team in tackles last year, and he's just third this year. So that, again, telling you that like they're stepping up this year. Safety, man, the safety duo, they have two, Jaron Thompson, 6 foot, 190-pound senior. He's the captain of the background, and Ketan Crawford. These guys are experienced, not really rangy, but they can tell covered and tell they have this freshman, Derek the Predator Williams. He's out the first half of the year. Targeting penalty in the Big 12 championship. They appealed. They lost the appeal. So he's going to have to sit the first half. They're going to rotate those guys in. Michel Tefisi, Jaron Thompson, a bunch of 4- or 5-star talent around the rotation. Look, these guys have struggled against the pass, and they don't have a consistent pass rush against the edge. I think, did they watch the ASU tape and pressure up the middle and get those two big guys up the middle? But
yeah,
that ASU
with that middle was linebacker, not our
starting five. That's right, with the middle linebacker coming up the middle. That's right. Did you see that and try to match it?
Is that Hill in the middle?
Yeah, so their middle linebackers. No, that's Jalen Ford, their middle.
Okay,
so
Ford. They're leading tackler, though, and, I mean, senior guy who we faced last year. I'm worried about up the middle in this game. I mean, obviously, you know, you got two All-Americans on that defensive line, and then a middle linebacker behind him ready to clean up, you know, whatever's there. So that's going to be a challenge even for a Joe Moore award-winning offensive line.
So that's a big matchup, I think. You got Brailsford with a little help as needed from Kalepo and Willow against Sweat and Murphy, right? Murphy, the better pass rusher, Sweat the run stopper. Okay. Yikes. And can their edges and linebackers contain the edge? You know, the Dogs love that. Like, what I think their offense is going to do is spread you sideline to sideline, tire you out, hitting the edges. They love that crack sweep that they always run. And then once they've opened you up a bit and you're getting gas because they're going sideline to sideline, attack downfield.
Yeah,
that's going to be tough. Like, so can they run that? And again, maybe that matchup, if it's Williams in the second half and maybe it's a healthy Ryan Watts, who are they going to get against Rome and what can they do? You know, do they try to press cover and take away some of that dink and dunk stuff that we like to do and get guys in space over the middle, but then get beat? You know, some guys will get pressed and Rome will just press right off you and then boom, you're gone, right? They got them deep. But I think that, you know, it's going to be really interesting. How does that Joe Moore winning lineup? And I don't think it's like a one-on-one. It really is going to be Brailsford with help from Kalepo and Boyle playing like a unit, give Penix time so he's not, you know, just running for his life left or right.
It's going to be fascinating.
And Dylan Johnson was so good in pass pro against Oregon, but if they're going to bring pressure and whatnot, I mean, that's going to need, you know, you just, in a game like this, you're playing a top four team. Like, you just can't have anything go wrong. And that's an area where the Huskies have shown weakness this year, even though they've kind of rebounded from that. And it looked good against Oregon. That's an area where, you know, it's concerning if you've got two All-Americans on the other side and not, you know, for example, ASU's defense.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. That's right.
Let's remember, if they do the ASU tape, right? A, we're in a dome. We don't have the weather conditions against ASU. Penix isn't sick. And so it'll be interesting. I think, like, to your point, BT and Law Dog, I'm curious how Grubb calls the opening sequence. Do they move? Yeah. Do they move? Try and move them laterally, right? Like, they got Oregon moving and laterally with those big guys. And is can Penix hit some dinks and dunks, to your point, some quick hitters where maybe they move him out of the pocket a little bit and he's got some motion going and he's moving so that they try to neutralize that a little bit and then get Johnson going in some various ways.
Last year's game, okay, Huskies were pretty lousy in the first quarter, I would say.
Yes.
They got a blocked punt in that first possession. You remember that? And but otherwise, Texas should have been up early, and Penix missed on six straight passes at one point. I want to say he was at like 54% completion in that game. He averaged over 5 yards an attempt in the Alamo Bowl compared to over nine this season. So certainly, like, you know, Texas defense was causing some problems for us last year. It's just, you know, that they basically, I mean, Tuol Papa breaks that long, you know, 42 yarder, and then they kind of grind him down, like BT was saying, right in the second half, and go tempo and start to, you know, put the pressure on him. So, you know, I don't think you can, certainly cannot look past this Texas defense. This is going to be the biggest challenge they've had all season. I'll take Texas defense over Oregon sight unseen.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think they're as good, if not better, than any defense that we've seen this year. And again, that ASU tape, not to harp on this again, but same thing with Stanford. It's like you had both Hatchett brothers playing, and they're just not ready.
Totally.
Yeah. No. The ASU is an anomaly, right? I don't think we need to continue to, you know, relive it every week, because they really rebounded down the stretch. But I think that's the game where, I mean, your offense just didn't look right. So of course, everyone's going to be watching it.
Yeah, that's right. Yep. Yeah, Texas has a few of those as well. Look, big time matchup. I think it's been interesting to see some of the national pundits come out and pick Washington. Where they haven't yet. Maybe they've learned their lesson, where I don't know who, if anyone, picked us against in the Pac-12 championship or the first game against Oregon. But it's been interesting to see guys come around, and I'm expecting a great football game of two programs who have, you know, such a lot of, you're going to get into it in the Wayback Machine, but, you know, have such great history, some recent success, and now back Texas playing for their first CFP berth, Washington playing our second, both trying to get to the college football championship for the first time in the BCS, in the CFP era. Big time stakes. I'm really excited about it. All right, Dog fans, we have had a couple of Pac-12. We got to get into this only because this is the last time we're doing the Pac-12 roundup. The last 2 weeks. This is it. Love the rest of y'all, but next year we're not going to be doing it. We're going to be doing some Big Ten roundup thing and trying to figure out what the hell is going on in Iowa and these other schools. But here, let's get into the few of the bowl games since the last show. First things first, though, Law Dog, the Dog Pod Challenge, how are we doing? Because I think that things have tightened up a little bit.
We got a little bit tighter over the weekend, during the week. And then last night with the Alamo Bowl, BT, I think you may have, you've definitely gotten a little more comfortable with the Oklahoma or Arizona taking care of Oklahoma there. That was the one I had to catch you, but I did have Northwestern and USC, and I was making a run at you there. You're still ahead by the three games, and so it's going to be tough.
It's going to be tough. Hey, well, let's get into this. So a couple of the results. We talked about number 15, Louisville, 7-5 USC on Wednesday night. That was a fun game to watch in the Holiday Bowl. Louisville was a 7.5-point favorite, but no, USC 42-28. Miller Moss, the future, man, records 6 touchdown passage. Yeah. And gets the coach the old eggnog bath, man. That was good to see at the end of that game, but a nice one for the back there. The next one, you talked about it, number 14, Arizona, and number 12, Oklahoma. I couldn't even get the freaking team straight last time, and I still picked the right one. Thursday, December 28th in the Alamo Bowl, Wildcats, the 3-point favorite. It was the defense, zone of forces, 6 turnovers for the 38-24 win. That was a fun one to watch. This is the one where I don't know why we didn't all just mortgage our houses and lever up the debt and put every penny we had on Notre Dame. I didn't understand this line. Number 19, Oregon State. Number 16, Notre Dame, Friday the 29th, 11 a.m. on CBS. Remember the Sun Bowl? Irish were just a 6.5-point favorite, man. I couldn't believe it. This one seemed like a no-brainer. 40-8, Irish. Irish go 3-0 against the Pack this year.
Well, it was a no-brainer for you and me, BT, but I'll just leave it at that.
You know,
hey, I love me some beefs. I'm going to keep staying on them.
How many years has it been where it's always at the end and we're like, I like the Beavs. I really like the Beavs. Hey, you know, it's a fun place to go watch a game. I'm going to give them that in Corvallis. So the New Year's Bulls picks, let's get into this. We got two to do. Texas is, so it's down. Texas -4 was 4.5. I expected a little bit more line movement. I didn't know which way it was going to go, but it's surprising, kind of really settled 4.5 to 4. So this is, you know, this one, I think it's a tough game to pick. I do think it's going to be close. I think it's going to be very high scoring. I like Washington in this game. I really do. I think that, you know, there's ways that things that scare me a little bit more about Michigan and Bama. I think Texas is favored for a reason, and maybe it is a lot of that talent, 4 and 5 stars, and what they've done, that they beat Alabama on a road, and a lot of things that make them the favored team. I get it. I just say wrong team favorite. It's going to be a close game. Somebody's going to be kneeling down at the end, or maybe throwing for a Hail Mary, you know, where like last year in the Alamo Bowl, where like Texas ended up with, what were they? They had the ball with 30 seconds left on the 20. Give me UW to win. Give me UW to cover.
Yeah. Give me the dogs. Agreed. Give me the dogs.
Yeah.
You gotta remember, BT, Vegas is not trying to accurately predict the score.
That's right.
They are trying to accurately
even out the money
on right. both sides. And yeah. Texas is one of those public teams, right? They have an army of supporters down in, you know, the American South, Southwest, and, you know, all over the country, really. You know, they've been pumping out, you know, alumni for decades. And so there's an army of Texas fans. There's going to be a lot of, you know, I guess they're kind of like the Dallas Cowboys, right? They're always going to have a couple yeah. points in that line where it's like, it doesn't really make as much sense, but just because they're going to have a lot of people betting on them. So I'm with you. I think UW wins this game. Give the 4 points is just tasty, you know, a little whipped cream on top, which I'll take that. Go Dogs.
Yeah, easy pickings. I mean, I can't wait to see Matthew McConaughey crying into his cowboy hat after the game. And, you know, I just think, like we've been talking about before, I think this is finally the year where it took right up to the end of the Pac-12 where a team runs real deep. And I think they got the talent to do it. I love all of this. Oh, they got 3-star guys. These guys are all coached up. This feels like a team of destiny. They know how to win close games. They know how to get out ahead. I think they're going to win by at least 7. Ooh, it's going to wow. be a track meet.
It's going to be a blowout.
I'm calling it right now. Yes. I think they can't run with us is my prediction. I think Penix wow. is going to be hitting all 3 of his receivers. I think Westover makes a big appearance in this game as well. And I think Dylan Johnson continues on the streak that he's been on. And the Dogs flex a little bit on this one and say, ooh. Wrong team favored, America.
If Dylan Johnson puts up any stats that are anything like he did in the Pac-12 championship against Oregon, I'm with you on that. If he's that guy, and from what I hear, the foot completely 100% healthy, and he played through a lot of pain this year, and he's now back to 100%. Wow. Wow. Can he do it against this rush defense? And if he can, I mean, I think you're absolutely right on that. Next one. Michigan favored by 1.5 against Bama in the Rose Bowl.
Yeah, I'm going to take the Tide here. I don't feel good about it. I mean, doesn't anyone in America want anyone to win this game? But but with that being said, I mean, the SEC and Saban's track record is second to none, and with the cheating scandal and all that stuff, I think I just like all those things to kind of break Nick Saban's way. It gives him something to motivate his guys with. They're coming off the huge win against Georgia. I mean, really, that team just lost one game to Texas, who's also in the Final Four this year. Mm-hmm. And they had a little bit of a rough stretch early, but honestly, they are, if this was any other 12-1 Alabama team, I don't see how they wouldn't be favored in this game. So I'm going to take Bama.
Shit, they had a rough stretch late too in the Auburn game. My goodness.
But yeah, you know, I can't just got the win
against Georgia.
This is just like, to Law Dog's point, it's like a turd Ferguson sandwich. Like, I just like so root against both of these teams. Like, there's going to be all these pictures of close-ups of Harbaugh and his khakis on the sidelines with this disgusted look on his face, and Saban complaining about phantom pass interference calls. I could just feel it in my bones right now. And I can I put in a prediction that neither team wins? I want neither team to win, BT. How about that?
How many overtimes
my prediction? Considering my record and sticking on the Bs for the entire year, I think I'm allowed a one-time prediction of neither team wins.
Okay. So what Mitch is saying is he's taking the 1.5 and a push.
Yes.
So I'm putting Mitch down for a push.
Oddly enough, in the Alabama-Michigan game, Mitch has picked Beavs win. Beavs by three. All right, we're gonna go for it. I think this one is tough, man. I kind of like the scandal bringing the Michigan team together and that sort of us against the world thing. That remember that Stanford run in the COVID era where they were like practicing in parking lots and weren't going home and they just were beating everybody. Where it just brings them together, you know, us against the world. Michigan hasn't won a game in the 14 playoff era, right? This is their third time there. They can't find ways to get wins. Whether it's TCU, it's Georgia, this one's tough. There's a lot to like about them, about this team. I think the spread is the right spread. But I think it's even if they win, heck, maybe they'll win by one. I'll take it. I'm going to take Alabama to either win or cover this game. All right, guys, huge game this week. I mean, words just can't give it justice what this is, what the Sugar Bowl game is going to be for Husky Nation. And if the Dogs can figure out a way to get this win and get this upset, I think you're going to see a significant increase in representation down in Houston, no matter who we play. But we'll be representatives there. Before we go, though, for those of you guys who want to stick around, the Texas program, I think there's a lot of parallels to Washington, and Lodog's going to get into this. Big public institution, highly academically ranked. Had eras of football greatness and had eras where they really struggled, and a big passionate fan base, flagship institution for the state. A lot of parallels between these schools. Professor Lawdog, why don't you educate these Dog Pod fans about the Texas Longhorn football team?
Yeah, one more trip into the Wayback Machine here. This, Texas, it started inauspiciously enough, football in Texas, right? And a lot of this was because there wasn't the bowl game and the Rose Bowl ties that the PCC and, you know, later the Big Ten were able. Texas did not play in their first bowl game until 1942. And they began kind of in this Southwestern Conference that they helped to form in 1915, the SWAC. Right. And that existed all the way until 1996. Arkansas had left for the SEC, but then in 96, they and Baylor, Texas Tech, and, left to form the Big 12. So Texas has also been kind of in the middle of this realignment framework that we've been thinking about, right? They were in 96, they were part of this huge move of the Big 12. Then they were kind of in the forefront of the pack. Pac 16, it was going to be, right, back in 2011. So, all right, Texas wins the SWAC after helping to create it in 1915 five times in 27 years. Nothing super, super something they could be proud of, but it was actually Texas A&M, their biggest rival during that time, that was dominating pretty much behind their coach, Dana Bible. And the Aggies claimed three national titles during that time and won eight conference titles during that stretch. So they were kind of the better program. But then in 1937, at the height of the Dust Bowl, guys, Texas brought back A&M's ball coach, Dana Bible, to turn their program around. So he was one of the most successful coaches in America at that time. He had gotten two national titles with A&M and then coached Nebraska to six conference titles in eight seasons of the Big Six. And Texas was his final stop in a Hall of Fame career. Then he gets the Longhorns out of the gutter, and they had three straight losing seasons, but then 8-2 in 1940. Then they finish in the rankings at 41, and then that first bowl game, the 1942 Cotton Bowl, and they were really off and running at that point. Bible successors kept the momentum going in the program a little bit. They won three conference titles, a Sugar Bowl, an Orange Bowl, another Cotton Bowl in there. But after a slush fund scandal broke out west in 1956.
Oh dear.
A little known coach named Daryl Royal had ascended all the way to be the head coach of your Washington Huskies. But Longhorns must have liked what they saw from the 4-4 Huskies that season. They made Royal an offer he couldn't refuse. Royal had hailed originally from Oklahoma, and Texas brings him in to be their head coach in 1957. And he coaches 20 seasons in Austin, guys. Never finished with a losing record. 16 bowl games in those 20 seasons. And this was back when it wasn't like they weren't handing out bowl games, right?
Yeah.
11 conference titles. And then they claim all three of, well, their first three national titles during that time. And at one point, from 1959 to 1972, Longhorns finished in the top 5-8 out of those 13 seasons. They beat Oklahoma 12 out of 13 at one point. They beat A&M 17 out of 18 during Royal's career at one point. So he was the legend. Of course, they named the stadium after him. What could have been BT and Mitch if they had just kept him at in Montlake. But wow. Alas, he moved on and went to Texas and, you know, was brought into the College Football Hall of Fame in 1983. He was Coach of the Year by various publications in four different seasons in his 20 seasons. Wow. So an incredible career. All right. So all in all, you stretch it from 1942 to 1977. Longhorns won 17 conference titles, finished in the top five 11 times, three national titles in those 36 seasons. And they fell back a little bit. You know, you're mentioning BT in the 80s and some of the 90s. Kind of when we were growing up, they weren't really heavily thought of. But Mac Brown, let's not forget, got into the top five times in a nine-year stretch during the 2000s, including their last national title, that 2006 Rose Bowl, the 2005 season, Vince Young. But then, don't forget, they finished runner-up to Alabama in 2009 with Saban's first title there. Mm, yep. And even Tom Herman, who was fired to make way for Sark in 2020, he had Texas in the final rankings three times in four seasons and went 4-0 in bowl games, and he got fired.
Yeah.
So their conference title this year was only their first since 2009. They won. They leave the Big 12 having won it only four times in 26 seasons, but six division titles in there as well. They also kind of overlap that Big 12 era with just one of the great runs of Oklahoma. So I'm not putting them up there with USC or, you know, Oklahoma even. But they are, I think, by any standard, a blue blood of college football, right? They're 948 wins, fourth all time nationally, 31 conference titles, 58 bowl games, 63 consensus All Americans. Those are all in the top eight. And, you know, obviously the Pac-12 knew what they were doing when they were trying to invite Texas back in 2010 to join the Pac-16. They wanted that Longhorn network, and so they said no. Larry Scott said we're not going to budge. And what could have been, you guys, and now they go to the SEC, and you know, it's just more consolidation. But anyway, a very proud program, an excellent program, and a lot of ties to the Huskies, you know, with that Daryl Royal connection, and, you know, in some big bowl games over the years.
Wow. I mean, and it's wild, that kind of Texas is back meme that, you know, where you'll get a couple wins in the beginning of the season, and it doesn't take much to ignite that fan base. And
yeah,
you know, also having gone to a game there, really impressive campus, really impressive group of fans. It was the hottest I've ever been in my entire life. It was 103 degrees in concrete with zero shade. There's no overhang in that stadium. And I just sat there with a wet towel on my head, taking it. Cause you know, you're there watching Alabama and Texas play. And so, you know, again, big public institution. It's interesting to look at their rivals, and their big two are obviously Oklahoma and Texas A&M. You know, and they've got the, you know, I would say that's their, like, Oklahoma is their Oregon. You know, you've got the school with some nasty ass fans who has had a lot of success, and it's an ugly rivalry. And the A&M one is just about to get back to being ugly. Obviously, they were in different conferences for years, but that one's going to get back to being real ugly as well.
Well, they've never all three been in the same conference, other than for some years in the Big 12. Because before that, Texas was in the SWAC, and Oklahoma was in the Big 8, Big 6, Big 8. A&M was in the Southwest, but then they left. And that is a pretty one-sided rivalry, especially in the later years. Texas has been literally beating up on A&M, and so I'm curious to see how that goes, and with them both in the SEC and A&M with kind of a head start in that.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah. Yeah. Things are about to get interesting. Look, I'm looking forward to this game, catching up with some Texas fans, I'm sure, as we will. And next week, we're going to be back on the podcast, talking about this game, hopefully previewing what apparently we think all around is going to be Alabama. But if it's Michigan, wow. Michigan, Washington. I mean, just going to be amazing. But whatever, man. Any way that this team can move on. I believe in this team. It doesn't come around all the time. But when you hear the way this team has come together, the way that Grubb, the way that DeBoer have them playing together, you got to believe. You got to believe this,
baby.
This thing is possible. Yeah, baby. Good. We got this thing. Go Dogs.
Go Dogs.
No. Touchdown, Washington.
Yep.
Washington State University.
Nope.
Touchdown, Washington.
Yep.
Oregon and Stanford.
Nope.
Touchdown, Washington.
Yep.
Los perros esquimales están arriba. Y hoy, los patos de Oregón bow down to Washington.